Once upon a time, I was invited to a costume party hosted by none other than Philip Coyer, the coolest kid in my fifth grade class. Now, I don't know about you, but I remember fifth grade as the year that I first began to really take notice of the social hierarchy of things. The year I first began to really recognize that there was a sort of pyramid of coolness, with a few kids at the top and more of us, myself certainly included, closer to the bottom. I was fascinated by trying to figure out the rules of this game. Was I on the bottom because I still wore sweatpants to school every day when all the other kids had moved on to real pants? Perhaps it was because word had somehow gotten out that I wanted to grow up and be a singer like Mariah Carey. Definitely not cool, although it is a dream I still cling to. Don't tell. As far as I could tell at the time, the most revered kids were the ones who were the very best, the very most skillful at making fun of other kids, which makes the whole system taken together, theologically speaking, a very particular kind of hell. Looking back now, it seems that the rules were mostly correlated with gender roles and who was the best at performing their part, boy or girl, male or female. Girls with fashionable outfits were, of course, higher up on the pyramid, as were boys who were good at boy things, like playing sports or hiding your feelings, right? So back to this high-stakes costume party. I had spent weeks deciding whether to go as a clown or an army guy. I had gone back and forth a dozen times and eventually changed my mind at what was probably the last possible moment. I think we'd actually left the house, but I ran back inside, I threw off the clown costume I'd had on, and I got dressed, I grabbed the army guy outfit, and I got dressed in the car on the way to the party. So after all of this, you can only imagine how surprised I was when I arrived and learned that this was actually not, in fact, a costume party. Nope. It was, however, an army-themed party. So at the end of the night, I won the award for best dressed, which is to this day the only time anyone's even considered giving me that kind of an award. Now you would think that this small miracle of good fortune would have been a triumph of feeling powerful, a triumph of feeling good about myself, but I was actually just as humble as ever. I was just as scared as ever, knowing that I had escaped such massive embarrassment by the skin of my teeth. Just the image I have in my mind of showing up to that army-themed party in a clown costume is a picture that, even though it never happened, is still so etched in my memory. It haunts me to this day, so much so that I'm preaching to you about it. Fast forward a couple of years, and I attended a Unitarian Universalist summer camp in Illinois where I grew up. And in this place, the rules seemed to be turned upside down. In this new place, there were certainly still folks that were more popular than others, but they seemed to be the ones who were the warmest and the most welcoming. Respect seemed to go to those that invited newcomers to join the circle, to bring them into the conversation. It was the ones that fostered connection instead of competition. This was a place of genuine love. If you've ever found a place like that in your own life, would you say out loud right now, genuine love?
Genuine.
Thank you. I remember wondering, how does a place like this even happen? One conversation that perhaps explains a piece of it has stuck with me over the years. I was on a long walk with a new friend of mine. And at some point, I don't remember exactly what I said, but I basically bragged to him that someone who we were both close with had given me a friendship bracelet instead of him. Now, maybe some of you know that in the social currency of hippie love camp, friendship bracelets are like the gold standard. So here I was, enjoying this person's company, really enjoying his company, and then saying this awful thing to him about who is closer friends with who. But my new friend responded to my unkindness with love, and he did it in a way that I literally did not know was possible. He smiled at me, and he made eye contact, and he said how glad he was that I was finding a home here. This was a person of creative love. If you've ever found a person like that in your own life, would you say out loud right now, creative love? Whatever nonsense I'd learned about social hierarchy, and whatever awful lessons I had internalized about how men are supposed to speak to each other, I saw for just at least that moment for the garbage nonsense that it was. When I showed up believing that competition and put-downs would get me somewhere, he showed up with a love that dismantles that status quo. And he literally loved the hell out of me. Dear ones, if we have any hope for building the kind of world we want to live in together, the kind of world we've envisioned in our hearts and articulated clearly in our principles, we need to seek out those mentors who love us enough to meet us where we're at and love us enough not to let us stay there. And then we need to go out into the world and be that person for others, because nobody but nobody can make it here alone. Years ago in college, I attended a weekend-long training for street medics, folks that provide first aid at large demonstrations. I learned a lot of useful things over the course of that weekend, but the thing that has stuck with me most of all was our first 20 minutes of introductions and check-in. We were asked to go around in a circle, each person sharing our name, where we were from, and also our pronouns, whether we wanted to be called by he or she or they or something else. Now, all of my life, people had read my gender in somewhat complicated ways, but this was the first time at 19 years old, the first time I'd ever been explicitly given the option of identifying as I wanted, as felt right to me. I was somewhat surprised to realize no one had ever asked before. Going on to learn the stories of transgender people in my life and in reading, I began to recognize that even while I continued to identify as male, I began to see how this multitude of behaviors and thoughts and feelings and preferences that make me the unique person I am have been carved up and placed in these narrow boxes of gender, boy or girl, male or female. This invitation to share my pronoun was a gift. You don't have to call yourself by what the rest of the world has always called you. You're invited to show up here as you are. No costume required. There are few among us for whom the made-up story of gender has not limited our understanding of who we are or who we might be. I recently heard a story about basketball star Wilt Chamberlain, who, despite being one of the greatest players of all time, was terrible at shooting free throws. Now, free throws are the only time in the game where you get to stand right in front of the basket and make a shot without anyone in your way. But Chamberlain, one of the greatest players of all time, only made 40% of these shots. Atrocious. There was one game, though, one game when Chamberlain made 90% of his free throws. Partially because of that, it will probably remain the highest scoring game of any player of all time here and hereafter. But at the very end of the game, he went back to missing again. The difference between the beginning, the middle, and the end? Well, when he was hitting 90%, he was throwing underhand from between his legs. Now, in junior high, I learned that this was called granny style, perhaps inappropriately. But it turns out that this is a much better way to shoot free throws. And he had proved it instantly by fixing his one weakness as a player. At the end of the game, though, I said he went back to missing. He decided to go back to throwing overhand and decided to miss because, well, the only reason he ever gave was that underhand made him feel like a sissy. To the greatest basketball player of all time, the only thing more important than the game that he dedicated his life to, more important than being a good teammate, more important even than his career, was not looking like a sissy. I wish that he had had a summer camp friend like mine, maybe a progressive faith community like this one. If we could have not loved the hell out of him, at least we could have loved the bad free throwing out of him. Religion ought to be the place where we dismantle these boxes that have been placed over us and locked down around us. If you agree, would you say dismantle the boxes? Religious community should be a place of love that comes in diverse ways and expresses itself in rainbow colors. Dear ones, there are those of us who were raised as boys, and we were educated into this kind of masculinity. We who call ourselves men have sometimes chosen misguided understandings of status over our relationships. We were taught to choose image over authenticity, to value speaking more than listening, to choose objectification too often instead of real connection. Fellow men, if this describes some piece of your own story, as it certainly does mine, will you join me in recommitting to building beloved community that sets our relationships ahead of these false idols of status and power? If so, fellow men, would you say, I do? Thank you. So similarly, for those of us educated into the myth of whiteness, we have too often learned to value our own comfort above justice for others, to value individualism over community, and intellectualized empathy in place of gut-level transformation, when transformation is what this country so badly needs right now. Fellow white folks, at a time when our country continues policies of separating families, particularly of color, at the border, and continues policies of separating families, particularly of color, in detention centers around the country, and continues separating families, particularly of color, through a planned system of mass incarceration whose whole purpose exists to divide people from each other and break down relationships. Fellow white folks, will you join me in recommitting to building beloved community and loving justice not just as a good idea, but as a new way of life? If so, would you say I do? Thank you. Those of us of all different kinds of identities have all different kinds of commitments to be making if we're going to build the kind of world we want to live in, the kind of world we've envisioned in our hearts and articulated in our principles. But nobody can do it alone, dear ones. In Canada, a couple years ago, a particularly awful video went viral online. A video of a conservative white religious woman rapping about how transgender people shouldn't be able to use the bathrooms for which they identify. That's right, I said rapping. This video was offensive on multiple fronts. Don't Google it. An 11-year-old Unitarian Universalist friend of mine named Anthony James wanted to respond, because having grown up in Unitarian Universalist community, it had never occurred to him that religion would be used for the purposes of discrimination. That's sweet, huh? As someone who himself at the time identified as gender creative, his religious community was the first place where he was totally accepted without reservation. And so he got to work and he organized his mom and then dozens of other UU congregations from across Canada who all contributed to a video sending messages of love and support to the trans community and declaring the role of religion in celebrating our full humanity regardless of gender expression. Now, when Anthony's mother expressed perhaps legitimate concern about this, real concern about Anthony as a gender creative 11-year-old, putting a video of himself permanently online, speaking out about a controversial issue, making the headlines in newspapers, she said, some people out there will hold this against you. 11-year-old Anthony responded, right, Mom, that is not a reason to be quiet. That is a reason to speak up. As a white guy with a middle-class background, I sometimes feel like I showed up wearing just the right costume to this party. It means that by some accident of fate, things around me can seem more equitable than they are, or my community can appear safer for me than it is for others. That's why I need people like Anthony, people like my summer camp friend, to mentor me and teach me the ways of beloved community. Would you say beloved community? I invite you to join me in seeking out those mentors that can show us the better way that we didn't know was possible. Together, we can find those moments where we can change the rules of the game. Would you say change the rules? Where we've been limited by made-up stories of race and gender, where we recognize those stories showing up as systems of oppression around us and also within us. Let's get together and dismantle these false binaries wherever we find them, and let's build bridges, not walls, to justice. Would you say bridges, not walls? Beloveds, in our prayer and in our words and our faithful action, let's go forth together in love to build the world that we know is possible. Would you say love?
Love.
Amen. May it be so.